This is a production of Cornell University.
To a point. We got rid of Health Now on the endowed side for health insurance because they were sloppy. They were pure sloppy. And we told it to them right to their faces many times, and we put it out to a formal bid and came back and decided that we were going to go 100% at them. And at the same time, the Weill Cornell Medical College did the same thing. So we went from 16,000 participants on the endowed side with family members and employees to over 20,000, which greatly increased our leverage with Aetna. And we're treated at a much higher level now with Aetna because we were able to combine our contracts with one contract for both families. So these kinds of things are always out there in terms of work trying to do the best we can to keep the benefit fee rate down, as well as to keep your premiums within reason. A similar thing happened with long-term care very recently. In fact, as of this month, CNA, which has had our long-term care business for about 10 years, decided finally that they were going to get out of the group market. Now, we knew that this was coming because every other major insurance company that was involved in long-term care insurance on the group level has gotten out of the market. There's only one left right now, and they are financially very shaky and not to be trusted. Where the market is going and where we had to go with the least amount of disruption is the individual policy. So from now on, if someone is interested in long-term care insurance, new employee, existing employee, it doesn't matter, on any of the campuses, by the way, long-term care is available to everybody, they have to go to the individual market and they're going to have to answer medical questions. That's where the market is. We can't whip up stuff that isn't there anymore. Maybe when a lot of you first joined Cornell, we had long-term care in place. Back in the 90s, it was with Aetna. Around 2000, we went over to CNA. As a new employee, you had 90 days to decide you want long-term care or you don't. If you decide during that period, you can get in without answering the medical question. That's the group bargain. That's the group deal. What the insurance companies have learned over time is that exposed them to an undue amount of risk. The other thing that was an undue amount of risk to them was the fact that they were underwriting a lot of baby boomers. So people who are as old as I am are getting into the market now, or getting into the age now, I should say, where we're in the market for nursing home care and other kinds of maybe even end-of-life care, the long-term care would cover. And they underestimated the cost of these things. So they're getting out of the group market, but the individual market, which is individually underwritten, meaning that they use your medical evidence sure that you're a good risk for them at the time that you sign up, or your spouse or your family members, all of whom are eligible to sign up for this, are good risks, and then you can get in and start paying your premiums. Once you're in, once you're approved, you're in, regardless of your medical condition thereafter. So the individual market is still good. It's very robust. It's still a money maker for them, so they're happy with that, and it will stay in. What we did to replace CNA is to bring in a brokerage firm that works this market exclusively. This is what they do. And they've been at Yale and Brown University for a number of years. We've got direct references from them. They've gotten very high grades for their customer service and their attention to detail for the faculty and staff at those two universities. We've just started using them as of February 1. And we're hoping that we will have a similar outcome with this. They're called Retirement Guard. They're on our website. If you look up long-term care on our website, you go straight to Retirement Guard now. References to CNA are largely removed, except for people who already have a CNA policy. They have a policy. I have a policy with CNA. And as long as I keep paying my premiums, CNA has to live up to what's in the paper. And it's not just me that's behind me, by the way. This is an insurance product. Therefore, it is also looked over by the Department of Finance in the state of New York. The Department of Finance is a new group. It's called the Department of Insurance and the Department of Banking, but they put them both together, and now they're called the Department of Finance. The Department of Finance has some very high standards that insurance companies must live up to in order to continue to do business in the state of New York. That protection is there as well. So for existing policyholders, continue to pay the premiums, and you'll be in good shape.
Gina, do you have a question?
I have a question for you. Excuse me. It's related to the resolution. I don't know if you've seen the particular things in the resolution. One of them is ensuring that health insurance plans offer significant mental health and counseling benefits. And I know that there's some disparity between the different colleges on that kind of benefit. And I don't know if you want to speak to anybody here wants to speak to particular instances, but what can the Assembly do, if anything at all, to help make sure that there are robust benefits on across campuses? Billy, actually, I know you spoke about this on the record, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, looking for a therapist, the one that, because I'm a CALS employee, I work at CALS. And so I'm part of the state system. So needing to find a specialist that was a specialist in A, I would have to go all the way to Corning, New York. That's the closest physician they had through Value Options or whatever the service is now or whatever the name is. And I thought that was, I mean, sort of undue. But, I mean, is that what you were referring to that? Yeah. So it's,
this is all going to be very relative, so I'm not trying to couch my terms, I'm really trying to reflect the reality of the market. The Mental Health Parity Act of 2006 makes it illegal for health plans to discriminate on the basis of the diagnosis distinction that we're talking about here. So if someone has a mental health problem, they need to be treated the same way as someone who has a broken bone. There can't be any specific limitations, and there used to be specific limitations all across the board. Cornell's endowed health care plan, over which we have some control, has been in the vanguard of this. I got here in 1997, and since that time, we've been working hard toward mental health parity and achieved it in the early 2000s, 4 or 5 years before the federal law was passed. Very important to us. As a campus utilization, or let me put it this way, higher educational utilization of mental health services is roughly double what it is out in the for-profit world. We're a different kind of organization, and that needed to be recognized when we got there. On either the endowed side of the contract, all the side, the different insurance groups, there should be no differences when it comes down to services and what's offered and what's paid. What you're addressing necessarily as a provider problem, if you will. We always have to remember that the way healthcare is structured in this country is a private for-profit business.
Sure.
Even if they call themselves not-for-profit, okay, so they don't have shareholders, but it's a private for-profit business. They're in because they want to do good things. I mean, we're in higher end, not because we're trying to make a whole lot of money, but because we like what we do. We want to do the things that we're doing too. But we have to make enough money in order to pay everybody in this room and a whole bunch of others. That's exactly what Cuba Medical Center is like, everybody else that's in this business. It's about the money. And one of the ways that insurance companies pull things together for employers is to cut deals or make network contracts with individual providers. And it's all done on an individual basis or with an institution if the providers are employees of an institution. So these things are rolled out to employers and say, we have this network and we've checked all the boxes. One thing that they don't have to worry about in terms of any regulation or usually in terms of an employer's concern is how far you have to go to get to that device. Yep. What they're concerned about is it covered?
Yep.
Is it there and is it there? Now, I have spoken to the officials at the state health insurance, so you wouldn't have to. You don't want to. They care about New York City and all of it. And I've literally been told, we're fine. We have no problems. We've got complete access. We're in great shape. You folks out in the country with this gesture, you have to maybe find some things, but you don't have a whole lot of providers, so what can we do? You know, just take care of yourself. So I think it would fall on deaf ears for you. We can't, as Cornell, force in any way. The fact that even our suggestion to the NYSHA program, New York State Health Insurance Program, for New York State employees, of which our contract college people get to participate, New York State get to participate, they don't take our requests and treat them very well. On the inbound side, if we saw that there was a provider for a service, or B service, or D service, or whatever it is, and we had a gap there, we'd go back to Aetna and say, fine, well, go and bring them in. We've been successful in that in a number of ways. We have been horribly unsuccessful when it comes to finding psychiatrists, oral surgeons, anesthesiologists. These people know that they don't have to join a network in order to make the bottom line for them, so they don't care. They don't. Dentists, another story, our dental program. Whatever dental program you're in, dentists are much, much more organized around resisting joining the network. And I know because my brother is a dentist. And he has told me, we've been approached, but we're never going to do anything. Because they don't want to have their rate be negotiated and, from their point of view, dictated by an insurance company. What's really dictating the rate or the availability of whether you get into a network or not is the money and the market. And if I'm an anesthesiologist, there's just me. There's nobody else. None of you guys are anesthesiologists, so I charge whatever I like. It's the way the market runs. That's what we're up against. So all the boxes are checked, I guarantee you. If you need a service, it's out there and it's in network someplace. Do you need to travel? Probably. If you have a sub-specialty tertiary care, as it's often called, that you really need, you may need to go to Buffalo or go to Roswell Cancer. You may need to go to Dana-Farber Institute or go down to Cornell Medical College in order to get the kind of care that you want. Because maybe that same care is available here in Ithaca, but you don't trust anybody but what. And the networks are broad, the networks give you the choice. In both the endowed and the contract college side, you go in network or you can go out of network. If you go out of network, it's going to cost you more money. And almost in every instance, if that's what you want to do, the plan will pay at least some of it. You get to go out of network and the financial responsibility is heavier on you than it would otherwise.
Thank you.
Other questions folks have on benefits in general or either of the two resolutions that you would please put forward?
I've got another one, my last one, before I have to duck out. Am I frozen right now?
Nope.
No, you're good.
Okay. So my question, I know most of them are relatively comparable, but what differences do exist in benefits between the contract and endowed colleges, if any?
Yeah, there are some, to a nerd like me in benefits, there are some very big benefit differentials. On the contract college side, there's a state pension plan. On the endowed side, we don't have a pension plan. For on the state side, for exempt employees, if you want a regular 24-paid salary kind of special, they get a defined contribution plan called, or a TIA credit based. On the endowed side, that's what we have for everybody, the TIA kind of thing. So there are some similarities there. The state plans have different benefit formulas, though, for the time. On the health plan side, there are different plans. The state offers various things around the state that you can go into there where you're at. And remember that all of the, I believe, 54 Cornell Cooperative Extension offices and all of their employees around the state are also through contract colleges in our health plan with the state, the NYSHA plan, using either the Empire plan or where they are an applicable HMO. So it's really kind of hard to compare when you get down in there. Are you comparing yourself to a person across the workbench from you, or are you comparing yourself to someone who's in Tavares County, working or up in New Line Forest in the Adirondacks? You know, they're just a little bit harder to talk about, because I look at it less as what's on the paper that you're comparing it to, and more about what's it like to be in that chair and getting the benefits that you have for a particular person's application. What access to networks do you have? What access do you have to the excellent counseling services that TIA CREP, Fidelity on the endowed side, and again TIA CREP, and FOIA, and MetLife, and Ballot offer for you on the contract. If you're close to campus, that's fine. If you're not, then it might be a little bit more difficult. Those are just two of the biggest plans that most people care about. The comparison between the two is just really difficult to say because of the structures of the plan.
On that note, between statutory colleges and endowed and the new budget model that had come out that sort of leveled the playing field between the colleges, did that take into account, is there a savings because statutory state colleges get their medical benefits and everything like that, that's subsidized by the state, correct?
Yeah, that's what you might think of as the employer contribution to the retirement plan, to the health insurance plan, and the workers' plan is fully funded by the state of New York for contract colleges. On the endowed side, departments have to pay for all of that. That's why the endowed side benefit pool number is high compared to the 2% paid for state-related taxes on the contract college side. However, if you're on grant funds on the contract college side, you're up to 50% because the state charges for all of the employer contributions. So here again, the comparison between the two is really kind of difficult. It depends on what position and where you're in. But this is a significant part. What the state has given us is a significant part. My boss calls it the deal with pension of the funding for the land-grant college system. It's not just the fact that they own the buildings and they fix the buildings and we have the employees and we run the program, but there are millions and millions of dollars every year spent on pension costs and health plan costs and retiree costs for buffering that the state has to have.
getting a great bargain in their state schools with their budget compared to the.
Now, literally, the benefit pool rate for the certain state jobs, the ones that aren't on the contract, is 2%. And everything else is covered by the state. That 2% covers things like the wellness program and FFA.
So when we talk about the cost of educating a student, when you are teaching a veterinary student or something like that, or an engineer, something, the cost per student is not quite the same as it would be to educate an English major or something like that.
I would need to introduce you to my husband, Lena Desmond, who's in the budget office, to handle that question much better than I don't want to hazard the into that water.
Or you have a question?
Yes, I have a question, Paul. So
sure.
When you talked about the retirement plans and the TIA and CRAF, so on the endowed side, Cornell contributes, right, towards some of the retirement, but not on the contract side. So
the state contributes.
Right. So I'll be here for 10 years in a couple of weeks.
Right.
And so I just got my email saying, you know, Cornell will not stop, or I got a letter, I'm sorry, that the state will not stop contributing to my retirement plan at 10 years.
No, the state doesn't stop contributing.
So does the same thing happen on the endowed side?
The endowed side, people don't have to put money order to get the university.
Okay.
That's
so it's
given, and it's there. We encourage people to put money in because they need to. But there's the endowed contribution from the university and the Kirk plan, Cornell University retirement plan, is not contingent upon you putting anything in yourself.
So is that to offset that the state, the contract college has a retirement plan? Is that why Cornell contributes on the endowed side?
Well, nobody else is going to contribute on the endowed side.
Okay.
Cornell does. The state isn't going to step in and fund what they would consider our employees. On the private side of the university, that's not the state's charge. They're not going to do that. You know, they already do plenty of funding over on the contract office side. Can I get in a plug for something that I want to
You can.
Okay. I'm not ready to fully get involved in or get a full disclosure around this yet, but we are looking at introducing for the first time choice for endowed retirees in their health care plan. Right now, endowed retirees who are younger than age 65 stay in the active plan until they reach Medicare eligibility. And at that age, they become Medicare eligible, and then they join what we call the Aetna Retiree 80-20 plan. And that plan has been around for decades. And some people like it, some people don't. The charge for it is lower because Medicare is primary at that point, and Medicare takes up most of the cost of it. In the last decade or so, actually more like, well, it's getting close to the decade now, but let's just call it that, Congress has been acting to fund an alternative to Medicare called Medicare Advantage, where it takes Medicare Parts A, B, and C, A, B, and D, D is for the Medicare drug plan, enrolls it all into one product run by an insurance company, and the federal government pays the insurance company to run the program for you. We have not been able to take advantage of that because the local docs have not signed off on that. But as of 2016, they have now signed off partially on it, and for 2017, they'll sign off on it entirely. That means we're going to be able to offer Medicare Advantage program for endowed retirees, hopefully in 2017. Now, I'd like to come back and describe that to you once we have this finalized with Aetna, so you understand what it looks like, and we can really get the people in here too, so they can talk and you can see what's going on with that. But it's really a great opportunity. It's going to give retirees the choice of, I just want to stick with my Cornell plan, maybe until the other one proves itself. You know, it still looks good 3 years from now, I'll join it. But we're going to give people the opportunity to stay in the Cornell plan the way it is and continue to buy Medicare Parts A and B or join Medicare Part C through wellness benefits particularly, and some things that, that I want to bring before you so I can show you what it is we're doing with that. I think it's a great opportunity. It should cost retirees no more money. In fact, we're hoping in the long run it's going to cost the retirees less money as we get into this, because we feel that the way insurance companies are running this and the fat subsidy that they get from the feds in order to put on this program will give us an opportunity to actually keep premiums as stable as we possibly can, and maybe even reduce them. Is there any questions?
Yes, thank you. Will that be eligible for people who are already retired or retired before 2017?
People who are already retired. We want to roll this out and give everyone who is a endowed retiree, give all of them an opportunity to elect. We're going to have a regular open enrollment every year. The retirees can leave Medicare Advantage and go back into the regular plan. Or, okay, I've seen it and my neighbor says it's great, so now I'm going to get over this year and give it a try. So we're hoping that it's going to be a great new benefit for retirees. Now that Aetna working with us has finally gotten the local docs to sign on it. And it doesn't matter where the retiree lives, because we cover all 50 states with this program. But not having it here in Ithaca has been a problem, because I was surprised. We've got an awful lot of retirees that still live here. In fact, the majority of our retirees on the south side still use this area as their home base. A lot of them are snowbirds, as we know, but they still use it. So it's, it could be a really great thing, and we're really behind this, hoping that we can get this in 2017. So I'll be bringing that back to you in a couple of months, maybe. We've already run this by both retiree associations, by the way, CAPE and CRA, and both of them are really excited about it. They think it's a great idea, and they're looking forward to it. And I'll be getting in front of their general membership, both organizations, this spring. Once, again, we have it finalized. We're within about a month of having it all finalized. And I think it'll be a good deal.
Good, thank you. Does anyone
else? I have a question from Shelley, actually. So Shelley is wondering, she went from endowed and went to the state side, and she went to get a loan from her endowment, TIA Craft Retirement, to build her house. I was told Cornell won't let me touch their retirement plan until I retire or leave Cornell. Why is that?
The Board of Trustees in their wisdom, many, many years ago, and I believe it is, I'm not being facetious, decided that the Cornell money has to be for retirement, and they won't let any Cornell money be used for collateral for a loan, for the very reason that people often enough skip out on payment of the loan, take the tax hit, and take the money, and they're left with much less for that. The person can, if they have been setting aside money into their tax-deferred annuity, borrow against that, regardless of what side of campus they're on. But in terms of the Cornell University money, that has been, that issue has been raised several times in my tenure here, and the administration, and I must admit with my support, says no. I think it makes no financial planning sense to gut yourself quite that way. Over on the tax deferred annuity side, though, that's a different story. But in terms of Cornell's fiduciary responsibility to our employees, I happen to think that it's very important that if someone spends a career here, they've got an accumulation that they know that they can count on, and no one can take away from them, even in bankruptcy proceedings under federal law. You can't touch her, no matter how much in debt you are. The employer provided retirement plan to protect it, and we respect that. Feel that that's really an important thing to override those kinds of concerns about using the money for intermediate or immediate
purposes. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other last questions for Paul?
Just to declare, Shelley is actually the Geneva rep, so she's on virtually attending today. Just the disembodied voice is
Geneva's my favorite place. I'm an apple grower.
Oh,
I'm perfectly happy with Geneva.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming. And if anybody has any other questions after this, I'm sure Paul's willing to take an email or a phone call. So feel free to reach out or to anyone on his team. Right?
JPD22. And this is great information for us to be able to take back to our constituents. So
and you're launching a new and improved website, is that correct? For benefits?
That's what our communications people tell us. Great.
Any idea of when it's going to happen?
It's
going
to be great.
I think it's close, Michelle. I think it's close. Well, thank you. All right. So moving on to next pieces of business. So BJ sent out an email to everyone about the notion of getting out some Get Well cards to President Garrett. So I know a couple people have reached out and asked for cards to have to be sent to them. But if you haven't, we have cards here. I would encourage you, take them back, take them to meetings, take them to other people. I carry a bunch in my bag, and every time I go to a meeting, I just say, hey, can you guys sign one? And then are we sending them back to you, or do you want to send them right to 300 Day Hall? Or
I think the idea was to send them back to us collectively. They can be presented on behalf of the assembly.
Yeah, I just didn't know if you wanted them to you or just...
Yeah, I think going back to...
Okay.
Mentioned, too, the idea of taking them when you go talk to the stakeholders.
Right, to the stakeholders. So as you have your stakeholder meetings, you can bring them and see if they can pass them around the offices or things, get folks to sign them as well. So we just want to get a good push of cards coming into us. So
what's the address?
109 Day Hall. Just Gina at Cornell.
Well, David sent mine to the Marie, and I got it.
All right.
Wait.
I got it.
Yeah.
There you
go.
Clarify, the stakeholder, I know this is the point, the talking point.
Yeah.
What's the mission is to tell them about us and...
Right, so the mission is to tell them about what we as an assembly do. And then the ask, I think, is if they would blast out to their constituency. So, for example, if I'm talking to Dave Taylor in Arts and Sciences, that he would reach out to his, next level of administrative leaders or to the whole staff community in Arts and Sciences to say, hey, the employee assembly elections are coming up. It's really important to have a voice in shared governance. There needs to be a voice for Arts and Sciences, and I would encourage you to consider it. So, trying to get them to do that for us. And, if they're saying I don't have time to write something, I think, Billy, whomever, I'm putting you on the spot, there's our marketing, that you can communicate it, or we can have one say, here's an email that you can send. Give them something already kind of written or something. But that's the ask that we want to make. Or if they're willing, if they're saying, hey, you can get in front of, I've got an all-staff meeting or whatever, you can get in front of them, whatever they're willing to give us. But ideally, we want them to be able to say that the EA, they need to have a voice and encourage their staff to run, someone on the staff.
Just to add to that, I don't know if anybody saw the article in today's Cornell Daily Sun. It was a research piece by a triple red, undergrad, grad, and PhD student who just released some research about the benefits of wellness at a university, but getting the buy-in for the manager, because it was a very specific slice of the conversation we're all talking about, is if the manager feels like they have a voice in how these benefits or how the wellness can be attributed or shared, there was an incredible spike in both productivity and the way I read the article, interest and support for the institution, that given the opportunity to go someplace else where they might have that ability to make choices, people would give up their current job and go to the place that would give them that, not autonomy, but it was a voice in the mix. So if you haven't seen it, we'll send it around. David, you can help remind me. I'll send the link around. It's a part of the conversation that we are all having here. And again, in that stakeholder conversation, it's as much what the EA does as getting your buy-in to seeing the value for what you do, the voice that you bring to all over the different places in the spectrum of the university. So I thought that was timely and very interesting.
That's great, thank you. Other questions about, has anybody tried to set up stakeholder meetings yet or gotten any response?
Do we have a deadline for that?
I think BJ said March
4th?
Third or fourth was the goal, because I don't think we're quite ready with our elections calendar yet, but we'll be doing elections in May. So we really want to start getting some interest turning. I know we got a couple of people who wrote in to the EA email saying, I'm interested and have more questions. We've got a guest here today. I'm not sure what inspired you to come in today, but you know, we're seeing interest. I know Hazel and I, at another meeting we were at, we just plugged the EA for 2 minutes and got some folks who said, oh yeah, I'm interested, and I've got something I want to bring to actually want Veterans Day off. That's what they want to bring to the EA. So, and Hazel and I talked about that. She's not here today. But, so I think just, you know, talking it up in other meetings with other folks is another way to get the word out there. Other panel?
Well, in talking with my supervisor about these meetings, he thought that we needed to be aware that when it comes to President Garrett's senior staff and her current situation, we may get some pushback about face-to-face meetings because their workloads are going to be getting larger. So that may be something we need to be aware of.
So yeah, so the folks who are kind of stepping in and keeping things moving forward, I'm guessing the Joels and the Joanne Stefanos and the folks on that VP level who are stepping up, we might not get the FaceTime with them. So maybe if you have one of those people on your list and you're getting some pushback, or even if you have anyone who's kind of giving you a little bit of pushback, try and find another avenue. Can I send you an email with some information? We have a 15-minute phone call. Is there someone else I can talk to? Kind of thing. So I think we're going to have to be a little bit flexible and, you know, maybe alter the course a little bit, but also be firm in trying to get to someone. Even if we can't get to those really high-level people, let's get to someone.
I was scrolling around the setup in box. Who was the contact for the veterinary college?
I think it's you. On my computer.
Well, I know that we're the ones who are going, but who are
it's
the
all in the, yeah, it's all the way in like the second column.
Okay.
Out there.
Okay.
I thought that Eric signed up to see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think what we tried to do, so if you looked at it, what I tried to do in making the assignments was to pair a brand new person with someone who's been here in the past, so that you know, we've got two different perspectives, viewpoints, different kinds of information, a good opportunity to just pair some folks together. So, other questions about that piece?
I'm sorry, and if it's, and please tell me.
No.
You know, just regarding the restructuring initiative that you've embraced. And because of the not just the impact on the office, but certainly is our full support for that initiative. That I think this is a long time coming, and your ideas are great. This assembly won't get there without your really. It's a fairly aggressive timeline. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Between now and March 4th, setting up your stakeholder meetings. Those need to happen so that between March 4th and when the elections are, the whole community can start to understand what the EA does, who it is, and how then they're impacted. I mean, on the infographic, one of the little blurbs there that really resonated with me was you can choose to not participate, but you should know that you have, that you can. And not many people know that they have representation in the assembly. So between now and March 4th and May, it really is amplifying that message so that there can be an election. There actually hasn't been an election in the EA for many, many years. And you all here around this table, are, it's a new day, and mm-hmm. it's going to get newer and fresher because you're going to be bringing different voices to the table. So it's very exciting. Whatever we can do in the office, certainly to lend support, tools, you know, whatever you need. I'm happy to work with Billy and certainly the executive committee on messaging. But if you haven't made the call yet, it's March 3rd, you're like, oh, man, you know. Honestly, give us a call. We'll talk through it. Whatever we can do to help you get there, have your meeting, that's the first step towards really getting this ball rolling. So charge on. With thanks.
I think it's also important as you go through your employee evaluation, it's now mentioned to take an active part in order to be meeting your higher employee expectations and to take that to supervisors if they can prod an employee or something that needs
a, great idea.
A little bit of that to meet their highest expectations. It is an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's all about timing.
So talk it up at meetings and conversations. I would encourage you, if you've got a couple people that you work with across campus, just send them an email. Put something together and say, hey, I mean, I think a lot of people are here because someone has personally reached out to them and encouraged them to come. So I think, you know, reaching out to someone and saying, hey, I think you might be good, you might be willing, you might be energized to be an active voice, get that out there to them. The more that we can spread the word, I think the better, to Gina's point. Any other things about stakeholder meetings? Okay. Let's see. The meeting with the Board of Trustees, do you want to kind of...
Yeah, sure. On behalf of Alan, the elected trustee who's stuck en route back from LAX, he was going to try and be here. He, as the trustee, he hosts the social event that has happened in years past between the Executive Committee of the Board of Trustees and the Employee Assembly. And... I heard it announced here, but it was never confirmed back to the board. So yesterday they sent out an email and copied me saying, hey, if you're not going to do this, we're taking it off. We haven't put it on the schedule yet because it hasn't been well attended. So in conversations with Alan and then with the executive committee of the EA, it's trying to assess your commitment to that actual, to the event. Does it have value to you? It was a good exercise for me to actually communicate with the Board of Trustees office to say, what's the objective here? You know, what is it that you are giving us this time for? And then how can the assembly make the best use of the opportunity? So it's not a meeting. It's not sitting around a table. It's typically a dessert and coffee kind of a thing. But as stakeholders with the main point of the well-being of the staff community at Cornell, that's where the conversation starts. And they are very willing to put it on the calendar, but wanted to have a sense of whether it was of importance and if there was a commitment from the assembly to do that. They originally had said, we need to know by tomorrow, which was today, and I said, we're having a meeting tomorrow, and we need another day. So it's a quick turnaround to really gauge your commitment to it. It may be that it's after your business hours. It may be that I don't recall what the tentative date was.
So March 22nd.
4 to 5.
Yeah.
And
it's also giving day for anybody that's involved with that.
Right. I think it's
yeah.
DJ.
Did I think that we're the only ones?
Yeah. Historically, it used to be a breakfast during business hours. I think it was better attended then.
We had to move it on the calendar.
To later. At least it wasn't as late as it was last year, where you'd have to go home and come back.
So that's what I know. And I talked to Alan. He said, yes, we really want to do this. Please, Gina, if you could talk to the EA, get their buy-in for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the conversation, you know, I don't know where it started or where it ended with the EA.
So I believe BJ sent out a poll.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can we just kind of show a hand who said that day and time could work for them?
Could
work. So it looks like most everybody who's here, all but three who are here.
Well, that is the phrase they're using is full and robust. So I'm going to report back that yes, full and robustly and enthusiastically on behalf of the EA, and let's it'll probably come back through Alan because it's will help support if it's, you know, he's the host of the event.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I appreciate your affirmation and confirmation and commitment to sort of from where I sit, and it's a different seat where you guys can have conversations, the direct conversations. I think it's probably one of the greatest opportunities that is afforded as by being a member of the assembly, and I'm envious. So.
And I do feel, I mean, we did have a very low turnout last year, but the conversations we had for those of us that were present, I thought were very, very informative and very useful. So, I mean, regardless of, I still would like Alan perhaps to still voice that even though if we do not have due other commitments, a full attendance, the ones that are going, we can certainly be prepared and present concerns and have a high-level, interesting dialogue. So we should not also be perhaps questioned by low turnout. It should be the desire to have that communication.
Well, I think that part of it is the event management itself, that there wasn't a, by this date, you're going to RSVP so they can prepare for four people to come as opposed to 19 people to come.
Yep.
So when they're preparing for, they have 19 name cards and the food and the expectation is that 10, 4 or 5 people come. That is the difference.
Yeah.
And I think that we can help, again, I'm not quite sure how the management works, but I've inserted myself into that to help, whether we do it with an RSVP or whatever, you know, to make sure that, because I fully agree with you. And I thought, too, that the conversations were, were at a, even though it was intimate, intimate was good.
Yeah.
It was a different day.
Mm-hmm.
So so I think the case can be made, but also we can help them have it be a much better event. So.
So I would encourage folks to put this on your calendar, right? Or should we wait until we hear back?
I would wait. And then I think what we'll do, again, trying to help manage the event, is we'll send out the invitation
so
that we can manage those centrally.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then we'll, once we get the affirmation that we have it, we'll devote some time on our March meeting to talk about what we want to talk to them about. And I think last year we tried to have different kind of people have different things that they talked about, so not everybody was talking about point one kind of thing. So. Okay. Next piece of old business we have on here is Vice Chair of Internal Operations.
Yes.
Is anybody interested in taking on that role? So let me tell you a little bit about the commitment, and Pilar can tell you as well. So essentially you would be part of the executive committee, which requires essentially a half hour to 45 minute meeting once a month in person, once a month via phone on the opposite of the EA meetings. And right now we're meeting Tuesdays at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
So you'd be part of the executive team. You would be primarily responsible for staffing all of the various committees. So if there's questions about committees, we need someone to participate on something, you'd be out there kind of trying to drum up someone to take that role, kind of like I'm doing right now with the vice chair.
Yeah. Recruitment, outreach, sort of.
I can tell you it's probably a low impact role at the moment because all of the committees are kind of out there. It's usually a much bigger commitment starting in the fall. But is there any interest in that? If nobody's interested, I'll stop beating the dead horse and we just won't.
Anyone? But if you haven't joined already a committee, you haven't already, you want to step up to meet your needs. That's right, guys. We got to have someone keeping on the committees, so. Do we not have to have someone?
I mean, if nobody does it,
then
we just have to do it. The thing that I will put out there, and I will just encourage people as we're thinking about next year, and we all sitting around this table have to make a decision whether we're going to run again or not. Think about your ability to commit to not only being here the first and third Wednesday of each month, but being able to commit to other committees mm-hmm. and different things, because all of our time is really pressed and really valuable. And if you can't do it, you can't do it, but it's hard to see the same people keep committing to doing things and get again.
Shelly said she might be able to, and she'll talk to you further about it.
Okay.
For the volunteer.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you, Shelly.
Okay.
So that was just my little plug. But as you're thinking about, you know,
moving forward,
think about your commitment, your ability to be here and to be involved, because as we grow and we push, there's going to be more needs.
And these roles are key to and core to shared governance. Our positions in these committees and in these groups add weight to shared governance and add weight to our voice. And we need to have that diversity instead of just four individuals regularly doing it. We need to have all aspects of the EA present and active. And moving forward, you know, these roles need to be met. So please keep that in mind.
Right.
Yeah, so again, just sort of following up on that, it really wouldn't change anything that you have to do at this, if you were to take on the role to the end of the assembly term in May, it's not likely that you have to do much other than if one of the committees needed staffing, then you do what Pilar and Tanya are doing right now. But it is, what it shows is a commitment to the assembly itself. You know, you're obviously well committed to the body and to the idea of shared governance, but again, I think if you can consider it again in this semester of where you're really trying to trumpet the value of the body and the institution, this is just another opportunity to make sure that clearly this assembly is fully staffed, it's robust,
mm-hmm.
it's moving forward, and if there's the executive committee that hasn't been able to staff, it's just less than.
Yep.
So any opportunity you can give it. I don't want to do a hard sell, but it really isn't probably going to change much for you this semester.
This one, yes.
Well, hopefully Shelly will consider it.
I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I feel like when we don't have the requirements, like maybe or something, and so maybe. I'm sure you're operationally thinking about really selling that strongly from the beginning of the time. That it's not, and I appreciate the respect you're giving us of this is what you're doing, you should think about it. But maybe we should see this as an opportunity. Getting into the assembly is just the beginning, but you need to settle into a committee. It's almost like a requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not in this space where we are asking people to do things, or where you know, well, I come to meetings and that's fine. For us to understand, it's more expanded than attending the meeting.
Yeah.
Just to help us. Some of us need nudges more than others. You know.
Thank you.
Just a thought. Not to dictate, but at the same time, there's work to do, and if you want to be there to do that, I have to consider a committee. I'm putting myself on the spot.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think the last thing that we had, and I don't know if we're prepared for a budget.
No, Gina owes me some new numbers. And once Gina gets me those new numbers,
it's on me.
Then we will certainly hear me talk and talk more. That we don't.
Does anyone have anything else? Or?
Just really quick. So, Shelly and DJ were brought to you today by Google Hangouts. So, if anybody ever needs or wants to be here virtually, just please let me know even a couple hours ahead of your meeting, and I will get you all hooked up.
Okay. David, is there a way that we can plug them in through
there?
There?
If you want to see DJ,
I don't know. Is there a way that can he see us too and everything?
He's
going to
be able to see
you
within his teeth.
I'm just thinking then we can maybe, I don't know how well, I'll be curious to hear how well they could hear. And, because I know Paul was very tall, I don't know how well they could.
We can work on that.
Yes, I'm just curious.
I think you'd probably have the lettuce and DJ's teeth. There's no microphone.
Oh, there's no, okay.
There. So we sort of felt like if we place them here, it's like he's sitting there. But, it'd be interesting to get the feedback.
The mics in this room should work for sound out. The only piece that you'd be missing is video in. Still have to use your laptop to record video from
that like a blue light?
It is.
Up there?
No.
No.
So is that not the camera?
That's a death ray.
Oh. Yeah, so that's
the camera.
But we're moving on up. Thank you, David.
Yeah, yep, thank you. Okay. All right, with that, motion to adjourn?
Okay.
Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.